Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Hello and welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are slowly killing themselves in order to make a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. It's by choice, though.
Yeah. I mean, the point of the game is that we want to have consequences that could potentially come up.
I never used to be the type of person that, like, planned their day around getting drunk.
Yeah.
But this show has occasionally made me have to do that. Like, I feel like I've had to prepare my body almost as if I were, like, preparing for an evening, like a romantic evening with my wife. Like,
so you trimmed your pubes to record today.
I shaved my bush. I worked out this morning. I ate super clean today.
Yeah.
I'm wearing loose fitting clothing right now.
Boy, you want to know what I've eaten?
Turn down the lights low.
I went out to Korean barbecue last night. I had a piece of banana bread for breakfast this morning, and then for lunch I had a piece of pizza and a burrito. We've gone in a very different direction from you, mon frere.
Well, I mean, by clean, I won't say that I ate kind of a lot of pasta. Like what I wanted to do a lot like what I think you were trying to do, like lay down a good layer.
Yeah.
To catch what we're about to do to it.
Sop up what we're about to pour on it.
Yeah. If you're just now tuning in randomly,
You've never listened to the show before.
This is
probably going to be a typical episode.
We are power houring this episode, which means a shot of beer every minute for the duration of the episode portion of the show. And
it's for an hour. We don't have to keep going after an hour, do we?
Is that not how we? Oh yeah, I think the last time we did a power hour, we stopped after the hour. So that's smart. That's just common sense. Taking care of ourselves.
Yeah. It's an embarrassing thing to have become a part of life for us, though. Like, my wife got off work early today, and she was like, "Hey, I'm coming home early." And I said, "Oh."
That's exactly what a wife wants to hear, too, when she says that.
I said, "Do you have plans for the afternoon in lieu of work?" And she said, "I don't know. I mean, there's some errands I could get done." So I explained to her what is going to happen to me today. I said, when you get back from, you know, going and taking some clothes to the thrift store and, you know, getting an after work drink with your friend, you will come home to a husband who is stupendously drunk.
I feel a great amount of empathy for you, Ben. I think I dodged a bullet because my wife is away on a work trip.
Yeah. Oh, she heard what you were about to do and left town.
She left me, Ben. The consequences were far more grave. Yeah, so after the episode's over, I can just curl up into a ball at the foot of my chair and wait for morning.
What are you going to be doing this with, Adam? You got a particular type of beer or a melange?
I've got a mess of Modelo Especials. That will be my beverage of choice. And I have enough to get me through the whole episode. So That sounds
nice.
I'm hoping I don't ruin a very good beer on this. Sometimes you have a binge session and you don't want that beer anymore for a while. So.
No. Yeah. I've been there.
What about you?
I'm drinking El Sully, which is also a Mexican style lager. It's made here in the USA by the 21st Amendment Brewery. I would say I would compare it favorably to Modelo Especial.
Is that going to drop some more IBUs or percentage of alcohol on you than what I've got going on?
It's a 4.8. What are you working with?
Did I misspeak when I said IBU? What was I talking about?
I assumed you were just talking about international business units.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 4.5 is what I'm seeing.
Okay. So I'm not terribly higher than that.
Nah. Nah. You're doing great. Well, I'm excited to get to it. What do you say, Ben? Why don't we dive right in? You know the rules. It's about every minute we will be drinking a shot of beer. And here's the thing. Because we edit these episodes, you may detect a change of pace to when these shots occur. Don't worry about that.
We're editing out the burps.
Yeah.
Be thankful.
Yeah, we're making this as good of a show as is possible under the circumstances as we prepare to bring you the Mournhammered version of Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 10, Homefront. Cheers to you, Ben.
Cheers, buddy.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
The wormhole is winking, and no one knows why.
Yeah, it's opening and closing. Like inviting them in, but then closes at the last minute.
Ben, like, I should tell you what muscle memory we're working with here. Like, after I took my beer shot, I went straight for the bottle and started drinking again. I need to concentrate.
Yeah, that is not what we're doing here, man. We can't Gabrus ourselves.
No. No, and it's kind of a mystery, right? Everyone's looking out the window. Like, it's beautiful to watch this at work, but the mystery involved is troubling.
It seems to be opening and closing completely at random.
I thought it was interesting that they're observing this from the promenade and not from the bridge. Like, they're not looking at this as, oh, do a shot. They're not looking at this as an emergent situation.
It's an ops level concern, right?
Dex and Sisko are just having a walk around, and it seems like a curiosity that a lot of people are interested in, but they don't think about it much past that.
Is the Defiant still fucked up? Is that why they have to take this other ship back to Earth?
Oh, I don't know. They also never show the other ship.
Yeah.
Well, the Lakota, right?
Right.
Yeah, we don't ever see it.
I looked up the Lakota. And the Lakota is a USS Hood class starship.
Oh, man. I would have loved to see it.
Why didn't they show us that?
The Hood a class?
Well, I just call it that. The Hood's an Excelsior class.
Yeah. That's a chill ship. I mean, the Lakota seems like a pretty chill ship, too. You know?
Do you think all Excelsior class ships are chill? I mean, Enterprise B wasn't chill.
Do a shot.
I just did.
Yeah, but the Enterprise B was like a variant on the Excelsior class, I think. It had those hips.
Oh, yeah. Those hips didn't lie that it's an Excelsior refit.
Yeah.
God, I just did it again. Why am I just drinking beer? This is going to be a problem.
You're going to be a mess.
Yeah.
We also get a thing in this episode that I hate, which is Star Trek implying that a joke was told, but not having the courage of its convictions to actually write a joke.
Mm.
This is a close-up shot with Quark and Morn, and Quark finishes his joke.
Then the Andorian says, "That's not my antenna."
Morn does not think this is funny.
And neither do we, because we can't possibly know what the joke is, given that we only know the punchline.
Yeah, but Quark can't explain the logic of his joke. He can't dissect the frog because Odo has showed up and he's quite cross with Dax and Quark.
Odo's pissed because someone keeps breaking into his quarters and moving his furniture while he's regenerating.
What a hilarious prank.
He kind of buries the lead because He's way upset about the furniture movement, but he's super okay with the idea of someone breaking into his apartment. Like, I think they're both equally bad, and I would argue that the break-in is worse.
Does he live in the Enterprise section of town where the locks on the doors don't work?
God, I don't know. It does bring to mind an interesting question. Like, Odo does not appear to have any awareness when he's regenerating. Like, you could just walk into his place and take all of his shit if you wanted.
He's unconscious.
There are no eyes on top of the goo bucket.
No. And the disruption that he's describing is that the objects in his apartment are being moved millimetrically. Like, it's kind of like John Roderick's torture dungeon that he devised for the members of the Bush administration, where he just changes the angles of the walls slightly.
Yeah, he's being gaslit, but to what end? You know what else feels like being gaslit, Ben? You and I entering into a business and show arrangement with John Roderick.
John Roderick, with whom we will be going on tour soon.
That's right.
We're going to be taking the Friendly Fire podcast to 5 cities. Check out friendlyfire.fm/live. Little plug.
Yeah, who knows when we'll take Greatest Gen out. This might be your only chance to see us. So come see us.
Yeah, come see us.
So all of these laughs, Ben, like, everyone's having a great time telling jokes, moving furniture. What you want to do is introduce a terror attack where 27 people are killed on Earth. Like, right on the heels.
I remember what pranks were being done to me when 9/11 happened.
The elastic band of my underwear was, like, just reaching the top of my head when the second tower fell, Ben. What's so fucked up is that the pranker, like, saw the first tower fall and then went in for the wedgie.
Kept going, yeah.
So
pushed
messed
my
up.
Head deeper into the toilet.
Yeah. Never forget that day.
And that is such a weird element of the tone of this episode.
Right.
Because they go up and, like, there's been a mass murder on Earth. First attack of its kind in over 100 years. It's a planet-wide day of mourning. It is, like, a major heavy deal. And yet, nobody seems devastated.
There's, like, so Odo goes up to Ops because he's the one that's called there, right? Like, he's through investigating the gaslight.
We're going to need you in Ops.
He goes up there where everyone has already gathered, and he's like, hey, guys, what's going on? Oh, by the way, have you heard about this fucked up thing happening in my apartment? Kira's like, not now. There's been an incident. And it's like that kind of trope, right? There's been an incident, and that's how he's told of what has happened on Earth.
Constable, take a seat.
Of course.
Did you catch the time index when they played the video back?
No.
It's computer begin relay at...
Time index 5911.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah. No, weird.
Wow. This episode premiered New Year's Day, 1996.
Yeah. Pretty wild.
Yeah.
But in the surveillance footage, it was like a Romulan Federation peace summit, and in the surveillance footage they catch an urn.
Don't need it, we're scattering the ashes.
In the corner there's an urn.
It is our most modestly priced receptacle.
That goes gold briefly before the explosion.
Worf's like, enhance. Enhance. Enhance.
Just print the damn thing.
Which is always fun. You got to check out your urns, Ben, before you convene a meeting like this.
Right.
This is like they sort of rack into Ben Sisko, and he's like, my God, the thing I've always feared has happened. A changeling has gone to Earth. Like, how could he have been the only one that could think that this would happen? Like, everyone in the Federation should know that this was likely. No one does anything about it.
Especially given the fact that they've been told that the changelings are everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Did they keep that to themselves?
Don't tell. Don't tell anyone. It'll just scare them.
Osama bin Laden plans to attack United States, like the the folders just on the
on
Federation.
On Ben Sisko's desk under his baseball. Like, yeah, I'll get to that eventually.
Oof.
Yeah. 10th shot, Adam.
I'm cruising.
Woo! Gold Dukat. So
it's not just, it's not the whole crew that's heading to Earth. It's going to be, Sisko and Odo and Jake. And Jake has got kind of like vacation on his mind. Like, it really does not feel like anybody's bummed out by what's happened. Like, there's a, like a jokey scene in Odo's quarters where he's making Dax put everything back in place. Like, prankster Dax is not a character I feel like we've established heretofore.
No, and it's really oil and water as far as the emotions go, right? We're still dealing with the prank thing, and we're dealing with Jake's reluctance to visit home because he's going to be made to do chores, and the aftermath of a terror attack. It doesn't mix well at all.
Odo is like the most serious character, and he's like, 65 people have been murdered, but first, I'm going to get all the furniture back where it belongs in my quarters. Before I start this investigation.
Before I open up a single document.
I want the bucket put back where it was. What? They're kind of flirting too, right?
Oh? Yeah.
I don't know. Like, what, you know, a little more to the left.
Whatever you say, Constable.
It feels a little hanky-panky.
It is the prank you play on someone when you like them, like what Dax is doing to Odo.
When you want an excuse back in their quarters?
Yeah.
I mean,
hasn't Dax been filled up by enough?
Yeah, but like, she's legendarily like open to like weird aliens to bang, right?
Yeah, it's true. She's down.
We get to meet Joe Sisko, who is Grandpa Sisko to Jake. And Admiral Cartwright to you and me.
It's hard. This is great casting because anyone who's watched Star Trek for any length of time, like, does not trust Grandpa Joe Sisko. As soon as I saw him on screen, I was like, oh shit.
I know who planned that attack at a Federation peace conference that Romulans were also at.
Joe Sisko's like, only when we bring our customers to our knees, then we'll be able to dictate the menu.
He's FaceTiming with Ben, like they're talking about how the visit's gonna go, and he's like the insistent parent that while Ben is in town for work, he come home for dinner every night like he's a child.
Yeah. There is some circuitous conversation about Grandpa Joe's health.
Yeah.
Ben Sisko seems to be a little bit of a helicopter son to him.
I thought... Like, there are some really strange tonal issues with this episode, but I would say that one thing I really liked about it was the kind of using Grandpa Joe's health situation as kind of like a parallel metaphor for the security situation.
Yeah.
Something that they don't want to look straight at. They don't want to really cope with the implications of.
As big as Crenshaw melons and twice as heavy.
Because it's scary and feels like if you name it, it becomes real kind of a thing.
Right. If you weren't sure whether or not now was the time to take this episode seriously, you may be confused when you see O'Brien and Bashir dressed as fighter pilots in Quarks.
I know.
And they're like chugging beers and mourning the death of a hollow person that they flew a mission with.
Yeah, and doing bits, like they're like O'Brien is doing a different accent than normal.
RSVP Clive.
To Clive, the best bloke ever to prank his kite into the channel.
But also they're like, oh, our hearts aren't into this thing we've never done before because of the real people that also died.
Wow, right? Like, why do you do both things? Either you commit to the bit and ignore the grief, or I think you just need to feel the grief here.
Right.
This episode is schizophrenic emotionally.
It really is. It is Like, we talked about, like, how the last three episodes were, like, very silly in tone. Uh-huh. And how, you know, this is a series that's legendarily dark and gritty compared to a lot of Star Trek. And we predicted that this might be the episode where it takes the turn to just being kind of full-time dark and gritty.
It
we were wrong.
Not. Hey, Ben, if you haven't already, I would like to recommend that you take your brode right now.
I don't have a brode.
Oh, no.
You've got all the brodes.
If I could just reach through the microphone like the Take On Me video,
yeah,
and give you brode, I would.
Yeah, and if I could reach through the microphone and hit you with a pipe wrench like the Take On Me video, I probably would too.
Oh, geez. Whatever I did do to deserve that, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. I can't, so you're safe.
Odo chats them up, and Odo mentions that he's going to Earth, and he's like, hey,
oh,
while
Christ, I'm like missing shots here. This is a mess.
Odo's like, hey, while I'm on Earth, do you want me to go say hey to anyone? And O'Brien's like, yeah, my parents are in Dublin. We know where Starfleet HQ is. I guess it's easy enough to beam around the world to go visit people.
Yeah.
But what the hell would Odo do in Dublin?
I don't know. He'd probably go check out Cow's Lane, where I lived when I did my study abroad in Dublin.
Oh, he'd have to do that.
Hang around in the Temple Bar district.
Pretty interesting moment here when he asks Bashir if he should visit anyone for him, and Bashir's like, no. No, I'm good. It's okay.
I'm chilling.
Don't visit my family.
Yeah.
Odo's kind of reluctant to go to Earth because of the prevailing anti-shapeshifter sentiments sure to be there after this attack. And I'm kind of with him. I'd be nervous about this too.
It is justifiable. It's a weird feeling.
I would just be a bird the whole time if I were him. Like, I would just be a parrot on Ben Sisko's shoulder. Everyone loves a parrot.
Yeah. They'd be like, hey, cool macaw. Welcome to Earth.
Don't those live a long time? Wow. It's a real commitment.
Yeah. Not a great pet, necessarily.
God, I went to a wedding in Vermont where like everyone stayed in a B&B because I guess that's all they have in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And in the lobby, there was a parrot, and he was 1,000 years old, like all parrots are.
Wow.
And totally cantankerous, also like all parrots are.
Fun.
And he would do car alarm sound and like honk. Like, he wouldn't do any fun voices. He would sound like there's a fire in the kitchen that someone would need to go in to check. He was not a calm bird at all.
No. That sounds that would really put me on edge.
Yeah. Not relaxing.
Up in ops, they're talking about the strange wormhole activity, and it seems to have died down somewhat. It's been 12 hours since the last time the wormhole opened without anything coming through it. And
you know what a good strategy is for making a mood more serious after it's been like kind of lightened up until now? Mm. Have a talk about religion.
With your coworkers. This is like such a Worf move, right? Like it is not an appropriate thing to bring up, but I'm going to bring it up.
Why does Worf not want to talk about his dreams in public with people, but he's totally down with talking about how he kills his gods?
He's like a 16-year-old quoting the ancient Klingon philosopher Nietzsche, who said that God is dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Worf is kind of emo Worfing here. I think it's the last time we see the station for the episode, too.
Yeah. RSVP the station for this episode.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pale.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
We landed Earth, and it looks like the Justice playset.
Yeah.
That a lot of this takes place at.
It's playing ball. Will you teach me?
Oh, sure.
Looks like we're about to see some nudes. Or yeah. Semi-nudes.
Nobody is rocking no side boob in the episode, and it feels wrong.
Sisko's rocking a TNG-era uniform for the trip, though.
Yeah.
I thought that was weird. You gotta
shape up for Starfleet HQ, right?
Yeah, I think you can afford to be a little dumpier if you're wearing a DS9 uniform, but you gotta tighten that shit up for the onesie.
Yeah. They meet Admiral Layton and Leah Brahms.
Yeah. Yeah, different job for her.
Yeah.
Susan Gibney, back. It's weird that they recast her as something and that she's not an alien. She looks generally like she did before.
Yeah, they just like made her hair slightly less big.
Yeah.
It's not even like that different of a do. It's just that it's not huge.
She's not rocking the... what kind of hair did she have as Leah Brahms?
The calzone.
Yeah, she had calzone hair before. Now it's super tight.
This is my adjutant, Commander Benty.
Really nice to see her again. I think she's one of my favorite Star Trek that guy ladies.
Yeah, yeah, she's great. Sisko was Layton's XO, so they're chummy. Like they know each other.
Yeah.
And Commander Benteen is like, she's his XO right now, basically.
She's the Shelby to Layton's Hanson, right?
Yeah, and Layton is so comfortable with Ben Sisko that he's a little casual with his anti-Ling feelings.
Something has to be done about these shapeshifters.
She's actually really more the Remick to Layton's Quinn, come to think of it.
Yeah.
Because this is much more of a going back to Earth and people are not what they seem episode.
Yeah, yeah. Ben Sisko thought this was just going to be a chill fact-finding mission, but he's field promoted to acting head of Starfleet Security, like on the spot.
Right. That is he's really blindsided by that, but takes it with aplomb. Like he's not like, wait, but I've built a life for myself.
Whatever gets me out of working a shift in Joe Sisko's Creole kitchen. He's like, Admiral Layton, you got an internship for my son? He really does not want to work in a kitchen.
He does not want to scrub crawdads.
We cut to Sisko's, and man, Joe Sisko is the kind of restaurateur that pays way too much attention to you as a customer, and it would drive me crazy.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy that strikes up a conversation at the urinal or in an elevator. You know, or it's like
he is urinal talkative. Yeah,
I like we're trapped here with you because we sat down and ordered food, and now you're gonna like come around and espouse your thoughts on the bread pudding or whatever.
I don't get the sense there's a lot of repeat customers at Sisko's because you go there once, you have that crazy experience, and then you just sort of trade on the story for years.
Right?
Yeah. You walk by Sisko's and you're like, wow, remember when we went there? That place is fucking nuts.
I wonder if
Joe's still alive.
Can't be. That guy doesn't take good care of himself.
Yeah.
Well, I've just poured out the last of my second can of beer at him.
Oh, yeah. I'm almost done with number two. I started taking shots, and then I sort of muscle memoried what that felt like, and then I just poured my beer into a frosty glass, and I've been taking great big gulps. Just because I didn't want to spill. Like, there's a lot of shit on my desk I don't want to spill on. That's part of it. And I did spill last time, so.
Yeah.
Trying to keep it tight.
Yeah. I thought a lot about, if you have the ability to beam to New Orleans for dinner. New Orleans is a town that hangs out, you know, that stays up late compared to a lot of the rest of the U.S.
Right.
So, like, that kind of works. It, like, stands to reason. But wouldn't it just be, like, fucking overrun with assholes every night?
A lot in this episode is made of, like, the utopian society that is Earth. How did
Earth
they
is
get
paradise.
How did they get rid of the assholes?
I don't know.
Like, it's one thing to rid the planet of war or whatever and to make a peaceful society, but how do you get rid of the flat-brimmed baseball hat, gutter vomit, like, show us your tits for beads assholes? Like,
I don't know. I think about this all the time. What can we do to convince those people to subscribe to The New Yorker and chill the fuck out?
Like, Star Trek has tried to tell the story of how Earth changed in the warlike way, but they haven't told the story of how it changed in the bro-like way.
Yeah, how do we get rid of guys named Chad from the timeline? Is look, it like a Star Trek Discovery solution where we send them 900 years in the future so they can't...
I don't want any of our Chads to feel bad. There are good Chads, and those are the ones who listen to and enjoy our show, but...
They're outlier Chads.
Even Chads know that there are bad Chads. And you need to police your Chads, Chad.
I'll go so far as to say that most Bens are trash.
Yeah, super trashy Bens. No doubt.
I'm one of them. Ben Sisko is not.
Ben and Jake are concerned about Joe's apparent weight loss, as one becomes when, you know, like, if it's been a while since you've seen your parents, and when you see them for the first time in a while, you definitely notice things like weight, especially.
Yeah.
At least I have. And so when they see him, they're concerned about this weight loss thing. And it's disclosed that he's had a bit of some heart trouble over the years. Heart trouble that's resulted in some surgeries, some valve surgeries specifically.
He's kind of Vadering, right? Like the discussion is that eventually he'll be more machine than man.
Yeah. Yeah, he's eyeing Jake's arm lasciviously. He wants to cut that thing off and put it in some Creole seasoning.
Yeah. Propose that they join forces to rule the galaxy together as father and son.
Yeah. Yeah, and boy.
I guess grandfather and grandson.
What you gotta do, Ben, like, boy, this episode almost got too serious. You gotta bring Nog into the scene, right?
Gotta bring Nog in. Nog dog.
Jake! Nog?
Yeah, people start being all gloom and doom about Joe Sisko. No, we're not going to be sad about Joe.
We know that this episode had kind of an uneven tone when we started, and that now it's been pretty like grim and serious minded. But Nog Dog is here. He's gonna bring back the uneven tone in a big way.
The moment that Joe Sisko says that he's thinking of putting tube grubs on the menu and that he served them to Nog indicates to me that he has or will soon fail a food safety inspection. You can't have live tube grubs in your restaurant, man.
Oh, yeah. They you go on the Department of Health website and look up Sisko's and see what they've been violated for. Very upsetting.
The Seattle rating is not letters, it's faces. You know how fucked up.
Oh, yeah, you guys have emoji-based rating system.
Yeah,
in Seattle. By the way, we're at the halfway mark.
Ugh. Yeah, cruising. In Seattle, the food safety rating would be a face with worms coming out of it. Be very ominous.
Yeah, or a tooth being ground to a point.
Yeah. Nog is there to complain about how clicky Starfleet Academy is, and he references a group called Red Squad, which are a bunch of Letterman's jacket-wearing assholes that he can't break into. And he never takes responsibility for not being cool enough to hang out with. All he does is throw bombs at Red Squad.
Was Nova Squadron disbanded and replaced with Red Squad?
Yeah. I mean, they both...
Is this one of those things where like they didn't want to pay the writer that came up with Nova Squadron a royalty, so they came up with a different squad?
This is why it's so important that writers and creatives unionize. Okay? They need to get proper credit and proper compensation for their ideas.
We stand with the WGA.
In solidarity, yeah.
And for that matter, we stand with like the Gimlet Union and the BuzzFeed Union. We're pro-union here on The Greatest Generation.
We are pro-seizing control of the means of production, just in general.
Hell? Yeah. I think it was nice to have Nog reintroduced here because he went away, but maybe a bit premature for this being the storyline.
It's the it's also the wrong storyline. Like, what do you want to do when you're pitching this story? Do you want it to be a return to serious DS9 after three episodes of Roswell and
right.
and fun and games? Like, what is this?
And I wonder if this is just the kind of myopia of 1996. Like, nobody that is living in a post 9/11 world imagines that on September 22nd, somebody was like, how do I get along better with the people I'm going to college with? You know?
These people haven't never forgotten yet.
Right. Yeah. And that's a problem, I think. I think that maybe this episode reads more as better if you haven't been through that kind of trauma.
Man, I don't know. I want to believe you that you don't have to go through the trauma of a terrorist attack to know that maybe if what you're trying to do is make a serious, dramatic story, you don't combine it with Nog. Nog doesn't mix well.
So the next scene after this is when they meet the president, and the president is like extremely reluctant to rock the boat W/R/T, the security state on Earth.
I understand the need for increased security, but blood screenings, phaser sweeps.
And I thought that was such an interesting choice. Like the idea that the president would not want to introduce a number of security measures, like when what we have experienced in reality is that anytime there's an opportunity for a politician to like overcorrect in terms of like control of population and like security theater, they will, because they don't ever want to like have blame land on them for an attack. And the president, like, he basically needs to be blackmailed into agreeing to some security measures that won't even affect civilians.
He's like, we haven't had bros barfing in gutters for centuries. Like, you're saying you want to reintroduce a dress code? It's not a problem.
We don't have to ban flat brim baseball hats that go over your ears. Nobody wears them.
Ben Sisko does a fun bit of street magic to the president, because he's like, now before you make up your mind, you may be interested in knowing that there is a changeling in the room right now. And he like magic fingers his hands in front of his face. and then Odo appears out of a suitcase.
Yeah. And then Penn and Teller use some kind of coded language to describe how they think the trick was done. and Sisko goes, I don't think I fooled you. And then that lady from Buffy says it was an amazing trick either way.
I like that show. But I don't care who knows it.
I'm so proud, because so many people have the YouTube algorithm that wants them to watch a Joe Rogan thing or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I've got my YouTube algorithm trained so well that all it wants to do is show me episodes of, or like single segments of Fool Us with Penn and Teller and this old man that in England that collects different toys and shows you them in a video.
I'll tell you what my YouTube algorithm is pointing me to: Adam Ragusa's cooking videos.
Oh, those are the best.
That guy is really blown up.
So the algorithm doesn't need to point me at those because I'm subscribed, baby.
Just cooking it on the stovetop, medium high heat.
If you haven't seen these before, go check them out. I made Adam Ragusa's chicken parm last night, and chicken parm, it tastes so good.
Adam Ragusa is much more internet successful than we are now.
It's true.
And it happened inside of like 4 weeks.
Adam Ragusa called me today for video advice. I'll hold for your laughter. And I was just so like, it sounds condescending and I don't mean it that way, but like I'm so proud of him. Like, me he's too. Really interested in making his videos great, and he's already making great videos. So I was like, what do you need me for? But he had a few questions about like cameras and like what he should be directing his money into, really, because he wants to like get better gear and professionalize a little bit. But I'm really happy for him. He's doing a great job, and he makes a great cooking video.
Yeah, he really does. And I have learned a lot from his cooking videos. I feel like he thinks critically about like technique in a way that is really smart.
Yeah.
And you can learn a lot from, but also it's not a schlocky cooking video, you know?
No.
Like, there's so many like quote unquote snackable cooking videos on the internet that are like teaching you how to make something like totally insane and preposterous that you would never actually make. And he's like, here are like things that you're gonna want to eat 7 nights a week.
That
aren't garbage.
He nailed the tone in such a way that it feels like it's not cute and it's not all the way funny and it's not serious. It's just perfect. I don't know how he did it.
He's done a good... I hope he keeps picking up the phone when we need a fucking song for our dumb Star Trek podcast.
I was going to say the same thing. Goose, we still need you, man.
We know we were lucky to have you from the beginning.
Yeah. So President Jerish acquiesces to Cisco security proposals, and it's going to be blood tests and TSA screenings outside of every Creole restaurant. That's the plan.
Now, when you're retrofitting a Starfleet installation to detect the changelings, you're going to want to place a phaser beacon over every doorway, set a setting of 3.5. That way, you'll force any changelings out of their chosen shape and into a gold figure. Nothing? You're not going to yes and anything? You're just fucking leaving me dangling here? Fuck you!
No, man, I'm just fucking brain dead at how good that was. Like, I wanted to go in a direction and I didn't have a direction to go. That was really good.
God. It's very embarrassing to be the only person that does something.
I've set up a TSA screening booth outside of this Creole restaurant against the wishes of its owner. I've hired private security to protect me during its installation.
Morn.
Dear sweet morn.
Morn.
In here, buddy.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
We do get that moment where TSA shows up at the restaurant, but not before Nog distracts Cisco from the very serious security problems that he has to solve by pressuring him into recommending Nog for Red Squad.
If there was ever a moment for DS9 to use a curse word, we really need Cisco to be like, fuck off, Nog. Really?
It. You know, we talked about that scene where Nog has to like dig deep and explain to Cisco why he wants to join Starfleet?
Yeah.
And that being the moment that Aaron Eisenberg cites as like the acting moment of his career.
Yeah.
This feels like a very cheap ploy to try and recapture the magic of that, and it fails, you know?
He's chasing the Avery Brooks dragon.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame them for trying, but no. It is such a weird... Like, there is no urgency in this episode in such a silly way.
Especially where urgency is a necessity. It makes the conflicts interpersonal more than they are globally strategic, right?
Yeah.
This is what happens a lot in movies and television. Like, how do you make a conflict understandable to the person watching your program? Like globally, it's too difficult. You can't tell a story that way. So you distill it down to the people you know and like,
right,
and turn those conflicts into proxies for it. But we'll talk about it at the end, but it remains to be seen if that's going to be effective here.
Yeah. Odo bumps into Leah Brahms and Admiral Layton walking around on the grounds of Starfleet Academy, and he's coming in seagull form, and Leah Brahms is like, "Wow, that is super cool. I have never seen you do that." And he's like, "Yeah, you met me 36 hours ago. Of course you've never seen me do that."
Leah Brahms looks over at the shuttlecraft parking lot, and her shuttle is just covered in shit.
I've been circling over the parking lot for hours.
I found a bush full of these red berries.
I'm remarkably accurate with these.
They really did not sit well with me. Layton,
I'm shitting like Ben and Adam are going to shit tomorrow.
Layton, like, throws some serious shade. He's like, too bad the other changelings aren't as shitty at looking as human as you are. And Odo goes in for like the sarcastic handshake and golden handshakes Leighton into proving he's an imposter.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well done, Odo.
There's like a little bit of a respect nux in that too. Like when Leighton realizes he's made.
Yeah.
And then he runs away and turns into the same kind of bird Odo was.
Yeah, that's not a better bird than Odo was able to make. That's the same bird.
He should have gone to a way cooler bird.
What's the coolest? Like, should he have been a pterodactyl? That would have been amazing.
Yeah, it's like making a smooth getaway is the most distracting possible thing.
He turns into a 747 and just like jet blasts them away.
They fly across, they land in the bay, like, wow, what a rush.
Oh man, those OG changelings can really do it.
Don't make them like that anymore.
That would be awesome if, like, a secondary part of Leighton's, of fake Leighton's character is just showing up Odo at every turn.
Yeah.
Wow.
If the changelings just always wanted to shame Odo for choosing not to join up with them.
It's clear, they mention it at some point in this episode, it's clear that the changelings are pissed at Odo for killing one of their own.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's how Odo detected the guy.
Yeah.
It was like they're talking to the real Admiral Leighton, who was not killed, thankfully. Yeah. And Odo says, like, I could tell he was just rip shit with me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not like real Leighton was super kind to him to begin with, but there was something else going on.
Right.
They post-game the incident together, and this is Sisko, Odo, Benteen, and real Leighton, and they're having a real, like, what are we going to do about this? Like, if Leighton could be compromised and we don't know who he is, then it's really time for these tougher measures, right?
Right.
Like, we don't have a lot of confidence in this milquetoast president, which, by the way, could be a changeling. Like,
right.
If we don't institute these safeguards, like, the highest powers in this government could be compromised, and no one's willing to do anything about it.
It'd be like you could have a president who was really like a foreign agent.
Right.
Like he was like totally working against the interest of your country.
I mean,
in that scenario.
Yeah, it would be the worst thing. You just have to hope that one of the parties would have the stones to impeach someone like that.
Right. You would hope.
I'm holding my breath.
Yeah. Same.
Is it time to reload the beers, Ben? I think I need more.
Where are you at?
I am a few shots away from finishing my third.
Oh, man, I'm into my fourth.
Oh, shit. Okay, well,
behind, buddy.
I only brought three to the basement, so I'm going to go get more, and then I will return.
Go get more. I'm keeping the clock, so you're going to have to make up shots.
I will. I'm gonna drink these last on the way upstairs and then reload on the way down, and I'm going to get a new frosty glass.
Hell yeah.
It's crazy how neither of us have had to pee up until now. There have been live shows where I've had a half a beer on stage and I've been like in a ton of pain by the end of the show because I've had to pee so bad. What's going on here?
I don't know exactly how the math of this works. I think that there's just a lot of... there's a lot of adrenaline to going out on stage.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that has effects, you know?
Yeah. Unintended consequences.
I was listening to a recent Doughboys live episode, and Gabrus leaves the stage and goes to the bathroom.
I was so envious of that move. God,
yeah.
We just can't do that.
There's no way.
No. I wouldn't leave you hanging like that.
Maybe with friendly fire, because there's two people left on stage in that scenario.
Yeah. I mean, John's an old man. I mean, if anyone's going to leave the stage to go to the bathroom, it's going to be him.
Yeah. He might be wearing a diaper, you know?
Tour diaper.
Yeah.
Available at the merch table.
So Ben Sisko gets called back to New Orleans because his dad is cranky that some... some Federation securities have shown up to take his blood. They have to blood sample him and see if it goes gold.
I was always absolutely terrified of giving blood. It's the only thing in my life I've ever been scared of.
Yeah, because the deal is they've instituted these new security features on everyone who is Starfleet and Starfleet adjacent. So that includes family members.
It made me realize that Sisko should have been put in a gold uniform for this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he should be in a gold uniform with four pips, right?
I wonder why they didn't do that. I mean, we know why. It's because production-wise, they're not going to fit him for a gold uniform that he wears once, but you're right. It would have been appropriate.
Well, they made him a TNG-era command uniform. Why not make him a TNG-era gold uniform, have him show up in the one he wears on the show?
Do you think Avery Brooks is keeping it tight enough to where he put on the season one era uniform and he still fit in it?
I don't know. I mean, Avery Brooks is a pro.
Yeah, man. I don't know if I could fit into any clothes I wore 4 years ago. Mostly because those are all JNCO jeans.
I've lost 35 pounds now.
Jesus, Ben, that's awesome.
I had to order a new belt, and I ordered a new belt in my pant size, and it showed up, and I couldn't even touch the end of the belt to the buckle. And I had to write that super embarrassing email, like, I ordered your belt in the waist size I wear in pants, and it did not fit. What should I do?
I have always had that problem. I never know the size of belt to buy because it never matches up to your waist size.
Well, I've also had the same belt for 5 or 6 years. Like, it's been such a long time since I've had to solve the belt problem.
Right. Wow, man. Congratulations for getting into shape. Are you feeling better?
I mean, I don't know. I don't. Yeah. I feel like for some, like, I've lost more than 10% of my body weight. And I don't feel like I look that different.
I honestly, I don't want this to make you feel bad, but I agree. I think it's because you carried it so well.
Yeah, it was just well distributed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I think it's, I've made a bunch of positive life choices attendant to this, and my physical appearance hasn't improved that much, but, like, you know, come on. Like, it's not going to improve that much to begin with.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it,
Grandpa Joe is doing that thing, like the old person on the volcano about to explode. He is resisting the forces at play here. He does
well, and
not...
he's resisting it in a way that Ben Sisko is like, maybe Dad is a changeling. Yeah.
Methinks Grandpa Joe doth protest too much.
Yeah. And I like this scene in that it reveals that Ben learned his vegetable cutting techniques from his dad.
Would you ever go to Sisko's after seeing how Ben cooks?
The fucking knife techniques are weak.
Wow. Very weak. In this scene, Ben Sisko is so paranoid that he actually looks down at Grandpa Joe's knife when he cuts his finger to check for gold.
This is like maybe... this is a moment where I think that I might take exception with an acting choice that Avery Brooks makes, maybe for the first time in the history of this show.
Wow.
Because he is almost orgasmic looking at the at the blood on the knife. Like, he
I
looks
can
at
see
it.
The Bill Tilly card right now. Like, Bill's going to find a screen grab where Avery Brooks' eyes are rolling in the back of his head.
He looks at it for such a long time that his dad has time to, like, rinse and clean a wound, pat it dry with a hand towel, and turn around and go,
Benjamin Lafayette Sisko. What the hell has gotten into your head?
Ben Sisko must have gotten in trouble so often when his wife was alive, because I imagine every time an attractive woman walked by, he stared at her for a full 90 seconds, because that's what he does to this knife. Just a quick glance.
He is fully bad boyfriend memeing the knife.
He is. He is, and I'm with Joe in this scene. Like, if you can't be a little more cool about it, then you deserve what you get. And Joe is mad enough to have a stroke.
He's stroke pissed.
Which is a way you do not want to be.
No. Not the way to be.
Later at Starfleet HQ, Odo and Ben Sisko have a talk about the situation. And Ben kind of comes to terms with how paranoid he's become. And Odo's like, yeah, that's why my people are here. Like, we're here to make you feel bad. Like mission accomplished.
When you start busting nuts over blood on a knife that your father was just using, the terrorists have won.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ben actually tells Odo that, like, you know what, bud? Like, I know it's been your mission forever to, like, find your people. I kind of feel like it would have been better if you hadn't, TBH. And Odo's like, Odo respect knuckles him. He's like, yeah, me too.
I love this moment, you know?
This is the most real good moment in the episode, I think. Like, just two guys shop-talking the situation, coming to terms with the truth of it, and taking it seriously without a fucking Nog there to fuck it up.
I think this is the first time Odo has named the game that his people are assholes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think because Rene Auberjonois is such a good actor through his cake makeup, like, you can see his pain more than it's ever articulated. And he rarely discloses, like, just how shitty he feels about this whole thing until, yeah. And this is one of those moments, one of those rare moments.
Did his look change a little bit in this episode?
I mean, he does change into a seagull and back. Is that what you're referring to?
I feel like his makeup or his hair was adjusted a bit. Adam, we're coming up on our final shot of the Power Hour here.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, I know I just asked you a question and then diverted. But this will be the last shot as we take over.
I can't believe it.
This is it.
All right, cheers.
I don't feel as garbage as I did last time we did this.
I think we're more articulate than we are even on a regular episode. We should do this all the time.
We would fucking die if we did this all the time.
You would gain that 40 pounds right back, and then we'd both die. Yeah. They would stick us in one of those extra large torpedoes from Star Trek Discovery, shoot our bodies into space.
We deserve it.
Yeah. You know what? I wonder if Odo's hair and makeup wasn't adjusted for natural light, which feels like one of the first episodes in a long, long time when he's been outdoors.
Yeah.
As he's had to be.
That's an interesting point.
Back at Cisco's, like, Jake has complained about having to be put to work. He's never working when he's there.
No, we have not seen any of that.
You think Jake tried to institute a new vegetable cutting policy that was, like, totally denied by Joe?
You pick a cutting board where if you lay a knife on the diagonal, you've got 2 inches of clearance on either side before the edge of the board, and then you use your fingers as a guard and as a guide, and you tuck your thumb into your fist so you avoid cutting it.
Joe's like, what are you doing? You're supposed to cut that tomato like orange segments. Also, why is Joe working a job? Can we talk about that for a second? Joe talks about, like, he has only enough time in his life to work a job or take care of his health. And so he has said that he chooses the job. But is he working to live?
He's not.
Of course he isn't. He's choosing his hobby over taking care of himself, which is what he never says, but that's the actual truth. And right. It's what goes uninterrogated by his family. His family needs to throw this back in his fucking face.
I really wish they had done that. Like the thing in Star Trek that you always have to remember is that everybody is doing this for funsies.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Everything is an opt-in.
Yep.
Which is as it should be, you know? Like, they have developed to a level of technology that everybody can have everything they want. And so any endeavor you undertake is done as an affirmative choice. Like, I want to better myself through this. And I can imagine that in a future like that, there are people that are still workaholics.
Yeah,
you know?
I totally see it.
And that's such a fucking interesting idea. Just fucking cope with it, you know?
Interrogate that.
Like, put it in the script.
Grandpa Joe doesn't have to do cooking and expo. He can work front of house. Like, he can be checking people in. He can be walking around the table, seeing if everyone's happy with their meal.
He can be yelling at some lady about how good her trout looks.
That's all he has to do. He's doing too much. And Ben and Jake are doing a bad job.
Yeah.
That's what I think. He's going to have another stroke again, Ben.
He's doing way too much.
Yeah.
Jake is making the case for, like, maybe you should lie down. And I do like Joe Sisko's take of you should...
The only time you should be in bed is if you're sleeping, dying, or making love to a beautiful woman.
It's a very Mike Mitchell philosophy on hotel rooms. Like, hotel rooms are only there for fapping, fucking, or napping.
Yeah, and I'm too old for beautiful women.
Yeah, if you're too old for beautiful women, maybe you're too old to work in a restaurant, Joe.
I mean, he's also, like, not so old that they aren't talking about him celebrating 50 more birthdays in a plausible way. So, like, so which is it?
I don't know.
We don't get answers to any of these questions because the power goes out. And it turns out that the changelings have put their Leet Hacksaw skills in effect and knocked out the power grid all over the planet.
You know what that means, Ben.
They've been throwing their wooden shoes into the gears.
Hence the word sabotage.
I'm still drinking beer for some reason. It means Earth is defenseless. Utterly. All they've got is the Lakota in orbit.
Right. It's another one of those, like, why is there only one starship at Earth moments.
Do not send me fucking emails about this, but do you think there's a starbase orbiting Earth? It feels like there should be.
There should be. They talk about it. They say, like, oh yeah, we're going to put all these like phaser things over the doors here on Earth, and then we'll get them up in the starbases in orbit also.
We know we have the starbase footage, but I feel like we rarely see the starbase footage comped on top of Earth.
It seems preposterous that the starbases would be tied into the Earth energy system. They should have an independent system.
Show us that beautiful Enterprise B footage.
They're not above reusing that footage. They reused it in TNG.
Yeah. Yeah, so back at the presidential office, Sisko, Odo, Layton, and some random dude beams in. I could not take my eyes off of random dude because I'm like, you're going to die, random dude. But he's safe. He's as safe as anyone else in the room. And Sisko's suggesting that a state of emergency should be declared. And kind of like the presupposition is that the wormhole winking was a sign that cloaked Dominion ships were pouring through. And they were using salvaged cloaking devices from the Battle of the Omaria Nebula.
Yeah.
Which I love.
I do too.
But also, we know from TNG that you can set up a web to detect cloaked ships. They should have webbed the entrance to the butthole, man.
Yeah, there should have been a bunch of tachyon beams going across the butthole.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Tachyon the butthole.
Why are they just letting this happen? I think this is terrible OPSEC by the Federation.
President Jerish Inyo admits that he is not the president for these times.
I wish every president that was not the president for these times could have such an admission and then just leave office.
A little bit of insight, a little bit of self-reflection.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary because, like, rebooting the power system is going to take a number of days. Like, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do in the darkness, Ben?
You're going to lose. What he does is he signs over a bunch of his authority to Starfleet, and they institute martial law. And, like, the button on the episode is Jake waking his grandpa up and they like look out the window at like armed Starfleet gold shirts beaming into the town square outside the restaurant.
Shit's getting hot at Sisko's, Ben. And we don't mean the gumbo.
Well, yeah, because we know that Ben's sister doesn't put enough cayenne pepper in it, right?
And we get some dun-dun-duns. It's a to-be-continued, Ben.
It is. I love a nice to-be-continued.
Especially mid-season. DS9 is not afraid of a mid-season to-be-continued. I love it.
It's fun. It's fun. Did you like the episode?
Yeah, I did. I mean, to the degree that you can like the first part of a two-parter, I did.
No.
I liked the... There are several references to, like, you know, shit hasn't been this hot since the Borg cube was in orbit.
Yeah.
I like those callbacks. Like, a number of callbacks to Best of Both Worlds in this episode I found very enjoyable. But, like, on a whole, I think I'm going to have to wait to judge it until we get a part two. I mean, there's a lot of setup and not a lot of knockdown. And honestly, tonally, this ep was kind of a mess. So maybe they're able to straighten out some tangles in part two. I think that's where I'm going to go with my review. What about you?
I would say, on balance, I kind of didn't like the episode. Like, there was a lot that I liked about it, but there was so much... Like, the tone stuff was so... Yeah. Overwhelming to me.
It's fun to talk about, though, which is why I feel like just our conversation skewed me into liking it, where maybe outside of the fun of that conversation, I would have been harsher.
Well, we're both obliterated right now, so...
Yeah, I'm pretty fucked.
That's part of it. I'm also, like, for some reason, finishing the partial beer that I...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not letting that go to waste.
I've been sipping on it, and I don't know why. It's a not good choice.
It's delicious, that's why.
I would say that overall, this, if this is the, like, big, I don't know. Like, we talk about the, like, grow the beard moment, the moment that the series changes and becomes the amazing thing everyone remembers it as. This ain't it, whatever that moment is.
This ain't it, babe. Well, you know what is it, Ben? It is always in our Priority One email box. You want to go check that out?
I do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is of a promotional nature. Goes like this. Resolved Mysteries podcast is hosted by three close friends who watch episodes of Unsolved Mysteries, the Robert Stack years.
Whoa.
And we research, retell, and resolve or resolve each segment. We give the most recent updates for each mystery, and mysteries is in scare quotes there, and answer the age-old questions. Whatever happened with blank and where is blank now? We laugh, cry, drink canned wine, and we want justice.
God, this is a concept that makes me upset that I didn't think of it myself. This is great. This is such a great idea.
It's a great idea. It sounds like a lot of work, and I'd respect anyone that does this amount of work.
Right.
So search Resolved Mysteries podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite pods.
Wow.
It's Re-Solved Mysteries Podcast.
Ben, our second Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from Reets. It is for Steve. And the message goes like this. Seems like yesterday we were jaking your mom's Previa to steal, to steal street signs together as teenagers. Now...
Oh, no.
You're going through the ultimate pond fire with the woman of your dreams.
Reets and Steve were a couple of no-good teens.
Sorry to have missed your engagement party. That's how it's spelled. But I can't wait to be the drunk of Shimoda at your wedding. Like Temba and the band Creed, I embrace you both.
Wow.
With arms wide open! Hey, that's nice.
Wow. I bet nobody expected you to take that in a Pearl Jam direction.
Oh, Ben, you gotta retake that because that's a Creed direction. That's a Creed reference, and I was doing Creed voice.
Oh.
You're gonna get so many letters.
I don't know what the difference is between different white people musics.
Oh, shit. If you have a Priority One message, do not let that deter you. Go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Put your name and your message on the line that is dotted.
Yeah.
Personal messages are $100 and may involve me doing an impression. Commercial messages are $200 and may involve
Ben. Of
the
Pearl Jam guy, right?
Of Ben doing an impression.
Yeah.
Both of which go a long way in supporting the ongoing production of this show. Should you think it's worth that? Which, at this point, I mean, who knows? Maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
I don't know. Whatever. Who gives a shit?
Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that
gold press latch.
Am I right? Yeah. Am I right?
If you've got a mom or a mother figure in your life, you know how hard it is to choose a gift to give them that says everything that you want to say. But maybe the goal should be to give them something that doesn't say anything at all, while at the same time saying 1,000 words. Because that's what pictures are supposed to do, right? That's a famous adage. Well, what if I told you that you could give this person in your life a gift that was infinity times 1,000 words? That's a limitless amount of pictures that play on a continuous loop on an aura frame. Because when you give an aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of pictures, you're giving them a story every time you send one to it. And it's so easy to do. You just open up the app, click on their aura frame, add a picture from your library, and in seconds, you're making your gift new again. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AURAframes.com. Use that code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply. Guys, have you ever nicked your nuts trying to make yourself look better in the buff? Who hasn't? Look, you can be as careful as you can around there, but if you don't have the right tools, all it takes is one slip up to turn your bag of grapes into a slashed up mess. Do you want to go to the emergency room and explain to them what happened? Do you? Do you? I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. These tools are designed to do one thing and one thing well: trim the body hair in your most sensitive areas safely. The Lawnmower 5.0 is the latest bunch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Spring cleaning doesn't just apply to the nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit plus Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this? It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Gotta get that gold press platinum. Get that gold press
platinum. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
To me, the only Shimoda in the episode.
Oh, come on. I can have my own Shimoda.
I'm going to predict a daily double.
Wow.
This president is bad and he shouldn't be president. And also my drunk Shimoda.
I wish he was the fucking president right now, man.
And also my drunk Shimoda for this episode is the president of the Federation. He is not good. He's like a guy stacking isolinear chips in the corner. He's a baby. He's a baby for a man's job.
And his hands are so small.
And I'm not saying that I totally agree with Layton's deal. You got to do some interpretation here, right? Like, you can't go full Layton with policy, but you need to take Layton's thought seriously. And he's just not, he can't do it. He's a drunk Shimoda. He shouldn't be president. Wow. So that's my drunk Shimoda. What about you, Ben?
All right. If you go to...
Oh, shit. This is 16, a time code Shimoda.
16-minute mark in the episode. I don't think this is Larry David. But I think Larry David might be doing a solo table at Cisco's.
They're sitting down. Oh, yeah. There he is.
He's by himself. He's heard tell of the great food on offer at Cisco's. I feel like he's maybe like doing a little bit of an I'll have what's Phil having. Like, oh, I also created a legendary sitcom. Why don't I go solo enjoy a cool restaurant somewhere?
Wow. I love eating alone. I've said this before. I go have lots of meals by myself. Good for this guy.
Every time we go on tour, I can't get you to enjoy a meal with me.
Oh. That's because you eat all the nachos, Ben.
That was back when you didn't think you could eat the milk.
Yeah, now I can. God, there's a guy over Jake's shoulder in this scene who is just unmoving. Do you see this guy? When they cut to Jake Sisko, he's
when they
like
cut to
up
his
against
single?
When they cut to a brick wall, like the brick wall behind Jake Sisko's shoulder, he is just a stone.
Wow. Is he like a cardboard standee of a man?
He's like when they shoot scenes in stadiums and they have to put a bunch of cardboard into the seats to look like people. He's one of those.
That's a funny line of work to be in. The company that rents out that.
Hey, Ben, what's coming up on the next episode?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, Adam. The next episode is season 4, episode 11, Paradise Lost, part 2. Preparing Earth for war with the Dominion, Sisko and Odo discover evidence of a Starfleet plot to seize control of the planet from the Federation.
Hey, you know what would be a good idea after Best of Both Worlds Part 2? Maybe defending Earth. Like just having shit ready to go. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe like, like this could happen again.
Yeah.
Let's put some stuff in place.
I don't know. Seems like a good idea.
I don't hate the idea.
Ben, I think we just start over at 1, right? When we're talking about Game of Buttholes, Will of the Prophets, now that we've reached the last square on the game board.
So I would say that our potential roll is anywhere from 1 to 6, right?
All right, man. Roll it.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I am a rolling.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Oh, man. I rolled a clean 6.
What?
So we are on square 6.
Huh.
I don't know if people know, but the squares that we came up with as updates for this thing are live.
Whoa, there they are. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a his eyes uncovered square. We've got a Kanar with Damar square. We've got a Jay Gordon square.
I love it.
And we have an extra Coco Nono square, which I personally am looking forward to immensely.
Excellent. Big fan. Well, if you've stayed with us this long,
we're sorry.
We're sorry, and thank you. Thank you to the people who make this show possible. It's not just me and Ben. It takes a village, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Takes people like Adam Ragusea.
I mean, I don't want people to feel like they have to live in a village. You can live in a cool city.
Making the music.
You don't have to not live in a village. If you want village life, if you want that village life, you do you.
And the interstitial music based on the work.
If you want town life,
materia.
Fucking go for it. I'm personally a city lifeman.
We got people making artwork for the show. Like J.J. Lendl and Bill Tilly.
I like to be able to walk out of my apartment and just go to the grocery store on a total whim. Like, I'll be in the middle of cooking dinner and decide I need a head of radicchio. And I got it.
The show's on the MaximumFun.org network. That's just me. They're full of great people who do work on our behalf.
I am not passing judgment on any life choice that anyone has made. And oftentimes, it's not even a choice, right? Like, you were born in a rural environment, and that's where you grew up and where you live, you know?
Support for the show comes from the Priority One messages and also from MaximumFun.org/donate. You can support the show on a monthly basis by going there.
I've been lucky enough to travel all over the world and see people living beautiful, enriching lives in all kinds of different contexts.
I don't want to
come across as a snob.
If you're not in a position to support the show financially, we'd appreciate a nice free review wherever you get your podcasts. Give us the full 5 stars.
Just saying that, like, my personal needs include having a fancy pants beer store close at hand where I can buy El Sully Mexican style lager.
With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is reading a radiation surge. It is only the size of our heads.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.